the show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. So off we go. Woohoo. It's the waxing full moon for full participation. So I'm delighted to welcome again Heather Rowan Roundtree Robbins, right, for round two of participatory anarcho-astro-animism. There we go. With contributions from Ruwa for Georgia and Jeff Goldblum reciting George Bernard Shaw to put liberating lucidity on our work table. August 19th is the full moon convention to November 5th, the election, and backwards and forwards, the Constitution, and it's the anniversary today of Woodstock, sleeper cells arising. So deeper dedication both magnetizes opportune path opening and is a kind of psychic self-defense for all beings. So my longtime ally, Kahooter, wonderful human, Heather Rowan Robbins, is a practical, intuitive, choice-oriented astrologer, yay, interfaith minister, author of the Star Codes book, the Star Codes Astro Oracle Deck, it's wonderful, other books, the weekly Star Codes Forecast, really good, and contributes to the Wee Moon Calendar, splendid. She organizes the Shining Mountains Grove for the Order of Bards, Ovates, and Druids, and has an online global practice based in Montana. Her website is Rowan, R-O-A-N, Robbins.com. Welcome, Heather.
It's wonderful to be here again, Caroline. I've enjoyed our conversations for decades.
Yeah,
you're the only other astrologer that I love all my astrological friends, but who really looks for the potential in each aspect rather than the, feeling proscriptive, it's potential filled. I've always loved that about our conversations.
Yeah, absolutely. Likewise, reciprocal blessing abounding. And let's just put, our beloved language, astrology, mm-hmm. that, dear to our hearts, for me since, I don't even know, before 1970, anyway. So mm-hmm. That it is descriptive, right? And a lot of people think that that's mm-hmm. all it is, like, oh, watch out, mm-mm. I love my friend Sylvia Hanley saying Saturn, uh-oh, might get something done, right? So it's descriptive. And then also guiding, instructive, so that's where we're going, right? Because people are sending me all kinds of goat-getting astrology, right? So we are liberating astrology, meaning that which is yes. liberating about it and that which it needs to be liberated from. So it's not what's going to happen, but what's available mm-hmm. with which to participate. And
absolutely.
I always love, yeah.
I just want to say about the language itself, each of the symbols, every one of them has a 180 degree of expression. And it's always up to us, free will and grace, where, and we don't get to choose which symbols are being set off, which archetypes are working, but we do get to work with the broad spectrum of it. And I find that the positive end or the empowered end of each of those aspects, house placements, signs, planets, is the medicine for the challenging end. So it is, it gives you a map of where to take that energy rather than get stuck in it.
Right. And that we have so many ways to participate in the fate of the world.
So mm-hmm.
And I do love finding ancestral ally Marsilio Ficino, great Renaissance astrologer, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. who was always berating the astrologers of Venice, going, no, do not set yourself up as a priesthood. No, may I buy real estate? You don't know. Right, but as a collaborative thing, so not to mm-hmm. outsource our autonomy to anything. And I just want to bring in just the cover of James Carse's great book, Finite and Infinite Games. Finite games about winning, an infinite game is about keeping everything in play. And let us mm-hmm. be a community of participants proclaiming that we are available and we are willing. So, mm-hmm. yeah, so astrology is a mystery school, guide to be a fully participatory human. We'll play with that forever, really. So we want to,
yes.
Invigorate the language, especially now, and we will delineate what's beckoning to us. And then anything you want to say, Heather, before we play this worthy long Ruwa clip? Do you want to chime in?
Just that I do see it as a map to live into the potential of the moment. And anybody who limits your options, get a second opinion. because right, there that's spiritual is so harassment. Much more room to work with. Yeah.
That's
and it can say it's good to keep your eyes open for the danger, but it's like driving a mountain road. Yes, you could drive off, but that's not where you want to go. If you have direction and you allow your calling, the directive process, then you can use the energy of the motion to pull you forward rather than throw you off the cliff. I think every aspect can be that way.
That's great. And then I'm reading for the first time an old Charles de Lint novel, Moonheart, and he's so good. And he has a character, Taliesin, important bard, who is telling to the protagonist heroine, Sarah, how he won Melgin's enmity. And Taliesin says, "It was not a fair contest. His bards were not true bards, not in the old sense of the word. They did not follow the way. Theirs was the poetry untouched by the Moon Mother, more bound in histories, being right, often false histories, with never a spark of her fey light in what they recited or sang." And then she says, "Well, how did you cross the ocean, just you and your dog, in this day?" And he says, "My magic sustained me. I turned inward, focused on the heart of my being, my taw, the inner stillness that is like magic, or more like the silence between the notes that actual music than actual music itself." It's like, yes, I'm recovering from the toxicity of Facebook, right, to the inner stillness. May we all have this available. And then
that's
I was
beautiful.
Saying to because we'll address everything on the other side of this, but I just posted this long, it's 8 minutes, but really, really worthy, Representative Rua is the first Palestinian elected to Georgia state office. She is a good use of anger, and she's just putting a lot on the table for all of us. So let's play Rua, and we'll come back on the other side of that.
Mm-hmm. On Friday night, I made a video about how I literally could not go to sleep because I was so worried about the wedge that I was seeing being driven between our coalitions. And I was actually specifically, and I should have been more clear about this, I was specifically talking about Palestinian organizers and Black organizers. And this was way before everything went down this weekend. Like, you can scroll through and you can look at the timestamps, and it was way before that. And I literally said that there are those who are so terrified by our coalition, they are going to do everything in their power to stop it. And I'm so sad to see so many of you falling for it. I'm genuinely so sad. Because one of the things I said in that video is having Harris at the top of the ticket does change things. It really does. Because the reality is that when somebody sees themselves in another person, they are going to feel attacked. And that doesn't mean that you stop advocating. It just means you change your tactics and you're a little more careful and you're a little more considerate. And if your response is, well, nothing matters more than a genocide, I'm sorry, but then stop advocating. I'm not even joking. Because so much of advocacy is being able to grow your coalition and being able to appeal to those who are willing to listen under the right circumstances. Because that's what the right does really well. I think the left does this really terribly. We talk about things like this as tone policing, and we're like, we're not going to do the emotional labor for you and go do your own research and all this other stuff. And the right wing is like, here's $5 and a flyer, go spread it out, welcome to the club. And to be clear, I've also made distinctions between building community and building power, and I'm specifically talking about building power in this case. But it only happens through community. And if you cannot make room for those who have felt no hope for a long time and finally feel hopeful, and if your response to them is stop advocating for Palestinians, then you are actively undermining the cause. I'm sorry, you just are. In what world, I genuinely don't understand, in what world does it make tactical and strategic sense to say, do not talk about Palestinians in Palestine? I don't know what world that looks like. I really don't. And maybe it's just like the organizer in me where I recognize that there are so many people who actually don't know any better. Because to be clear, we knocked doors this weekend. And I hope you understand that a lot of the misinformation about, for example, about trans people, about like even Muslims and Palestinians is permeating. But also that message about there's no point in voting. When I heard that at the door, I almost lost my mind. What is happening on here is filtering into the real world, but not in the way that you all think. most people are not watching these back and forths, but they are leaving with a specific impression. And if we allow, because I want to be clear, I don't know if it's like AIPAC paying for these accounts. I don't know who exactly is behind these. But if these people are successful in isolating us from each other, even if Harris wins in November, we are going to be so much worse off. What Harris does after she takes office is going to be completely and entirely dependent on how well our coalition survives the next 90 days. Because that is the only way we can push her on anything that any of us care about, whether it's on Palestine, whether it's on reproductive rights, whether it's on housing, whether it's on FTC regulation and unions. Every single one of these things is going to require us to continue to show up, because voting is the beginning of the conversation. But if you tell people that if they vote a certain way, they should keep Palestinians out of their mouth, I'm sorry. I can't live with that. I just can't. Because these allies are the ones that saved my life in Georgia. And it was particularly Black clergy, by the way, who did the most over the past 10 months here in Georgia to push back against the worst of this. And they have cut relationships on our behalf, even when we fail to show up for them. And I want to be clear, there's going to be people who say that I'm putting others over our own people. And frankly, screw you to any of those people. I'm sick of you. I really am. I am so sick of people who have done nothing but try to like isolate Palestinians from the rest of the coalition. I really am. Because while you all are coming on here with your hot takes and building your platforms and whatever, the rest of us in the real world have been building massive coalitions to be able to get more people out of Gaza, to be able to grow enough influence so that hopefully, when we have a new administration, we can actually do something about it. But the problem is your hot takes go viral because you have way bigger platforms than we do. And this is the consequence, frankly, of people who have no political experience by their own admission, who have literally said, I never used to pay attention to politics before this, and now I'm here to tell you we should burn the system down. No, that is not the way life works. That is not how any of this works. And by the way, we heard this in 2016, and how well did that work out? Because it is true. Everything that's happened in Gaza right now is because of Trump's policies. And the reason we are mad at Biden is because he never overturned them. He just continued them. So if we have an opportunity to not have either of those people, why would we not take it? If we have an opportunity to shift things, why would we not take it? And I want to be clear, and I've been clear about this to the vice president's team. I've been clear about this with everybody. This is why I support the Uncommitted movement. I have told her team that I would happily yell my endorsements from the rooftop when I'm ready to make it. But I need to see some kind of commitment that we enforce our laws. That is all we're asking. Enforce our laws. And anybody who is saying that, like, oh, she's already called for a ceasefire and now they're moving the goalposts, you have not been paying attention, because I can literally show you interviews where I've specifically talked about this from, like, March and February and, like, even November of last year. None of this is new. So stop with the bad faith takes. But I was really disappointed to see what kind of happened over the weekend. And I want to be clear, there are people who their platforms grew because of their advocacy on Palestine, because of them public opinion shifted, and that is amazing. That is awesome, and I'm so grateful to you. But by your own admission, you have said, you yourselves have said in your videos, and I've seen so many of your videos, about how you were never politically engaged before and you don't really know a lot about politics. But then you turn around and call the rest of us sellouts for trying to be as tactical and strategic as possible within the circumstances that we exist in to prevent more harm, right? I'm not saying this is harm reduction. I'm saying I'm trying to keep the board the same so we can keep building on the wins that we have. But I do think that those of you who have built your platforms for Palestine need to start being more honest about your limited understanding of government. And I'll give you a very clear example of this, and I'll end with this. I saw a creator who has talked a lot about Palestine, who said that Harris is implicated in all this because she's the vice president. and that she should have resigned if she wanted us to know that she was distancing herself from this. And to be clear, I'm not somebody who says that you should only ask for a slice. I'm somebody who says you should ask for the entire loaf, because in negotiations, you're probably going to end up with a slice or a half loaf, right? But if you start with a slice, you're going to end up with crumbs. You should always shoot for the moon. But that was the most absurd ask I've ever heard in my entire life. For a few reasons, like so many reasons. Do you know how many Palestinians she helped? I know that they're not going to like make this public or whatever, but I will tell you this, Harris's sphere of influence is very different than Biden's. And it includes a lot of Palestinians. And no, I wasn't one of them up until like last week when she came to Georgia and I got a few minutes with her. But let's say she did resign. Do you know the process for replacing a vice president? The answer is no. If y'all did, you would not be like flippantly calling for her to resign, because the process would have been for Congress to pick her replacement. And the House is controlled by Republicans. And now those Palestinians that had access to somebody who was at least trying to help them would have lost that. Nobody made her do anything because they couldn't. She is the vice president. So she did not take any action that made this worse, but she was able to take action to help some people. There's a difference between asking somebody who has no control over their role to resign, which makes total sense, versus somebody who could have insulated herself while continuing to try to help people. And I'll leave with this. It's okay not to know everything. I don't know everything. I'm not going to pretend to know everything. But on this, I can comfortably say that I've had enough years of experience to understand how to move forward. And the only way we move forward is together, and to recognize our own biases and fix them. Because if our coalition survives through November, we will change policy. Period. End of story.
Oof. I am so grateful to Representative Ruah just to put this on our work table, and then everybody listen to this, and then let's have smart, strategic conversing on top of this blazing, useful, practical a real Dakini, right? Meaning the wrathful Dakinis transform the poison of anger and righteousness into the tonic of wrath, fierce protection of all beings, you know. And she's doing it. She's doing it. I love her fierceness, right? Is that how you feel, Heather? Whoops. Did we lose Heather? We might have lost Heather.
No, I'm here.
So,
I'm,
oh,
you're
there.
Hear me?
Oh, Yeah, now I hear
I
you.
Love
now
her I inclusive fierceness.
Inclusive
I love her.
Fierceness.
Yes, because she, you know, really is like what will help reduce the total suffering here and increase the total hope. And she sees to brings in the big picture, which I really appreciate. And you know, I was thinking that her experience of her description of what is our role, not to be tight and fight for only one thing, but to really see the big picture and how can we, you know, take what we've got, work with the best of it, and then improve it from there and keep taking it forward, is so much about the heart of Pluto in Aquarius, which is Pluto's retrograding back into Capricorn for the fall, but then goes into Aquarius for the next few months, next few decades. And Pluto was in Capricorn when in America's birth chart, but Pluto was in Aquarius at the birth of the Constitution. Uh-huh. And I see that her voice is really the Pluto in Aquarius. How do you know, which has its dangers, you know, the dangers of what do we do with the voice of the populace? It is only as good as the mindset of the people and the education and the awareness of the people. But the and I use education in the broadest of terms and the awareness of the people. But that I see, you know, the call for us to work together with the eye of what can help the most, and then bringing it into specific issues is part of how do I help the most. So I really appreciated her,
yeah,
her whole
and she
perspective.
Says, you know, and she's earned this right. She's far wiser in these realms than I aspire to her lucidity. Voting is the beginning of the mm-hmm. conversation. She's earned
yes.
the right to say this. She's earned this. Mm-hmm. And do you know how many people Kamala Harris, how many Palestinians Kamala Harris has helped, right? And she's got whatever. And it addresses the toxicity on Facebook, people going, the righteousness and the complaining. We're going to address that in a moment and compost it in Pluto's cauldron, right? Because Pluto in Aquarius, right, it dredges up the toxicity, which is the toxic mimic of community, is a cult, right?
Yes.
And a cult is That's where beautiful. People have outsourced their Saturn to a dingbat or to a deriving status.
A system, you know, I just, or a theory.
Yeah. And I remember when I was lucky enough to be in Syria with Deborah Felmuth, this is a long time ago, but we went with UNRWA, wonderful UNRWA ally, to the Palestinian refugee camps. And I will always remember this 96-year-old Palestinian woman getting up to dance in celebration of the divine at the call to prayer. And then she said, "We don't want activists deriving status from our suffering. We want people engaged, respectful, listening to us, and who bring, you know, art and beauty and enthusiasm, right? We don't want deriving status." Okay, so we're going to toss that into the cauldron. I kept that in my pocket forever. She was so fierce and radiant, you know, like Ruwa. Mm. So many ways. And that's, I sent you something that I found quite goat-getting on Facebook. Facebook has been challenging toxic realm, right? Because almost everybody who's righteous, mind your tongue, Caroline. Don't be in the reactive sphere. I'm binding my tongue now. But somebody sent, you know, an astrology thing going, they said, I sent this to you, but in terms of election day, wouldn't the sun trine Saturn benefit conservatives? And Mars opposite Pluto is like a ruthless fight for survival, and Saturn's on Trump's natal Venus, and he has Mars and Leo, and goes on, blah, blah, blah. And many, many astrologers around the world say that, you know, the election bodes well for Trump on election day, but blah, 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 and then the retrograde.
I think that that is part of that is that so many, it's hard for anybody to clear their intuitive antennae from their opinions. And I think last time a lot of astrologers underestimated Trump's appeal and got caught out, and they don't want to get caught out again. So instead of having hope, they're cynical, so they won't be caught out in a negative way. Trump has Saturn and Venus conjunct in his natal chart, and that's kind of, it's hard for him to love. It's hard for him to care. And that Saturn-Venus conjunction can be used beautifully, but it can bring up all the trust issues because of an early, you know, feeling let down, like they couldn't count on Venusian warmth when they were a child. So the trine of Venus to Saturn, Saturn and Jupiter, we can give them to the Democrats and the Republicans. So they've switched roles over the years, but they are the contractive principle, which also wants structure and sanity, and the expansive principle that wants to spend and wants to keep their money. So, you know, each of the parties takes part of the Jupiter and Saturn. We can't play it pure type. It is true that the aspects can support on either side, but I see that Venus trine Saturn on election day as people wanting sanity and wanting to feel safe and wanting to feel solid. You know, that Venus will, you know, is what my feeling is on that.
Right, and the guiding to all of us, you know. To have a deeper dedication. I love, again, my friend Sylvia says, you know, Saturn, the greater, or trines the greater malefic. if we have a deep dedication, I mean, just everybody, a deep dedication to collective well-being. And let's define politics as simply a dedication to collective well-being as a starting point. You know, then, you know, who has the most inclusive story, who has the most dedication, yeah, wins. And then just in service to composting complaining, right, and being available and willing, we just have a very short but worthy clip. It's Jeff Goldblum reciting George Bernard Shaw. So it's just, let's just take it all into our Saturn deep dedication. Here we go. It's Jeff Goldblum reciting George Bernard Shaw.
I do find myself coming back to this quote by George Bernard Shaw. Let me see if I can remember it. He says, this is the true joy in life, the being used for a purpose considered by yourself as mighty, the being a force of nature instead of a feverish, selfish little clod of ailments and grievances, complaining that the world will not devote itself to making you happy. I am of the opinion that my life belongs to the whole community, and while I live, it is my privilege to do for it whatever I can. I want to be thoroughly used up when I die, for the harder I work, the more I live. I rejoice in life for its own sake. Life is no brief candle to me. It's a sort of splendid torch that I've got hold of for the moment, and I want to make it burn as brightly as possible before handing it on to future generations.
That's beautiful. That's so good. There's the Saturn.
Mm-hmm. That is the best of Saturn. And I see Saturn is actually trining the sun on election day. Venus is not quite in there. Venus is more close, is approaching a square to Neptune and is opposed to Jupiter that day, that T-square. So I think the Venus is actually more in relationship to Jupiter, which supports the Democratic Party, than it is Saturn that day.
Right, but of course there's no fixed future, right? Otherwise we couldn't have a democracy.
None.
Yeah, and what's going to happen is not the question, right? Certainty is a booby prize, right? But again, what do we have to cooperate with? So, right, I mean, certainty's always been a booby prize, right? But now there really is known. It's all available to participate by dedicated action, you know, and all of our affinities and all of our dedications, you know. So, you know, for 28 years, I've been weaving Washington, D.C. and California back and forth, going, may the political suffuse the spiritual, and may the spiritual suffuse the political. Let's just go for that, you know. You know, everywhere, and that's part of what we get to invite in. And then today is the anniversary of. Right, it's the anniversary of, there we go, of Woodstock. That's what it is. It's the anniversary of Woodstock. Right, August 15th, 1969. I know where I was. I was on the Northern Cheyenne Indian Reservation in Busby, Montana. And that was the moon landing, and that was Charles Manson. But we're going to play a little bit in our break music to remind us. And then, you know, on the other side, we'll go more Woodstock and positive sleeper cells. We have a two dragon ticket, right? 1964, positive sleeper cell now becoming aroused, but also 1969, right? That's pretty fun, right? Do you remember? I know you're younger than me, but do you remember?
Not much.
Oh,
okay. Yes.
Not much.
That full of that excitement and joy and juiciness of that era, that was pretty astounding. And, you know, the sense that anything was possible and all the love that was coming forward. I was looking also at that was 1969. Right before that, the 1968 Democratic Convention that was such a mess. And just to compare, because it also was in Chicago, and I was comparing those times. Uranus was at 27 Virgo, and it is forming a trine to where it was now. Now, what I noticed the 27 degrees Virgo, there was Uranus, Venus, an exact Venus-Pluto conjunction with Mercury at 21 degrees of Virgo, right on America's Neptune. And it was trying to figure out what was really going on there was so difficult. The planets are in very different places now than they were then. But right, I wanted to see what triggered off then. And the trine from Uranus to Uranus is an important part of it.
Right. No, that's very witty. That's very witty. We want to do a redo. We want to do a redo. And we want to see something, you know, ceasefire, arms embargo before then, just for the fun of it, just before Monday. Why not? But what you bring up is very witty, because Uranus's degree in the Chicago 1968 is a bald man seizes power at an assembly of leaders. Well, there's Mayor Daley, Right. There were fist fights and just things and just yelling and just, you know, inside the thing and outside the thing. And anyway, so there was all that dynamic. So we're going to have just a little 3-minute break music that you suggested, which is a great idea, part of our positive community dynamic. And it's Joe Cocker at Woodstock. So here we go, team.
And this title just about puts it all into focus. It's called With a Little Help from My Friends. Remember it. Stand up and walk out on me. Lend me your ears and I'll sing you a song. I will try not to sing out of key. Yeah. Oh, baby, how you back? I tell them you say no more.
That's beautiful. Pretty great. Thank you. Thank you. My wonderful guest is Heather Rowan Robbins, again, part two. And you suggested that, which is a great rousing theme for positive community and tolerance. Mm-hmm. You know, what would you do if I sang out of tune? Oh, Facebook. Because what I've noticed, right, is that, you know, when people are snippy and then it creates an atmosphere in which one is tempted to react rather than respond. And there's a lot of, we're composting that. What would you do if I sang out of tune? Would you stand up and walk out? There's a lot of that going on. And we go, no, we're all in this dream together. And to create the atmosphere conducive to the desirable, right? And let's go to the full moon. Let's go to the full moon. No matter where you are, you know, some people will be at the Democratic Convention, but everybody will be somewhere, right? And it's such an opportune. It's such an opportune full moon. I mean, it's so beckoning to us all to animate the desirable theater. And it's such a great conversation that's happening now, you know, and then, I mean, all around now. It's the Leo, sun, full moon, sun at 27 Leo and moon at 27 Aquarius. That's the U.S. moon. Uranus at 27 Taurus. We'll talk about that too. mature woman reawakening to romance. Mercury retrograde goes back to station at 21 Leo, which is a carrier pigeon fulfills its mission. It's like, everybody, mm-hmm. dree or weird, you know, play your role in destiny. So there's a lot of, but the Pisces-Leo conversation going, it's not performance, you know, and may this suffuse the convention and wherever we are. It's deep, dedicated magic to the desirable mm-hmm. out to the desirable atmosphere that invites the best of everybody. Does that hum with yourself?
That's beautiful. Yeah? Absolutely. You know, it's a full moon in Aquarius, which is often the best gathering moon of the year. It's wonderful for any events, festivals, conventions, and wild full moon parties by the lake. But it is, I'm thinking back on memories there, but that moon in Aquarius bringing up, you know, every full moon has, you know, highlights, but it also, it points out to attention. And the sun in Leo asks us to shine as an individual, and the moon in Aquarius says, but we have to do it for the community. We have to be aware of the community. I say the gift of Aquarius is always, and I see this with Pluto in Aquarius and the full moon in Aquarius, the gift of Aquarius is I experience something authentically, I am aware, I become aware of it, I start developing a theory about it, I look around and see how it's affecting everybody else around me, I then take it, you know, then I develop a theory about it and I use that theory to improve the world around me, starting with the authentic and taking it out. The danger with Aquarius is I have a theory and I'm going to cram all my experiences into it. I'm going to, you know, make this work and I don't care if you hurt because my theory is, you know, this, and it's cut off from direct experience. So every sign has the gift and the challenge. And so this full moon really asks us, how do we shine individually for the benefit of all sentient beings? How do we shine, you know, how do we Leo it, you know, with the gift of being for the benefit of the community? And I think it's going to be beautiful. It's got real
right,
potential.
Right, and let's include again squares, 90 degree angles, in which again the non-cognoscenti go oh, and it's like, excuse me, no, the square is simply an assignment to all of us to get illusorily estranged principles to dance together in us and in the world. And in this case, both the sun and the moon exactly square Uranus and Taurus, which is the whole realm of participatory animism, the earth, the community of the earth, to be good earth citizens, right? And 27 plus Taurus, our colleague Bruce Schofield, very interesting, great astrologer, Aztec, and many things. But he has a great thing. Let me just excerpt a little bit. So he says, you know, the United States, like other nations, is more than just some land with people on it. It's a dynamic system produced by innumerable social interactions and communications. Goes on like that. And one of these degrees is 27 Taurus. In 1773, the planet Uranus, which was yet to be discovered, passed through 27 degrees of Taurus, and this coincided with the Boston Tea Party and Britain's response to it. The next time was 27 Taurus when Mormons fought the U.S. government over control of Utah and the economic depression called the Panic of 1857. And the next time was 1941 when World War II was declared a national emergency. Uranus was once again 27 Taurus this month, August 2024, and will remain there through September. And it will make a second pass in May of 2025. So I like that it's bringing up all those things. But we say, what do we all have now that we didn't have then, which is the participatory animism, the working with all that we love and to dedicate to being cultural agents on behalf of what we love in nature. So I love that part. So thank you, Bruce Schofield. That was fun.
But I looked up the Boston Tea Party itself, and actually Uranus had retrograded back to 25 degrees, which is where it will be on election day. So I think it's actually kind of that 25, and on the day of the Boston Tea Party, Uranus was 25, Neptune was 20, Saturn 25, Virgo, and Pluto was 21, Capricorn. So it was a grand trine, Uranus, Pluto, and that Neptune-Saturn conjunction. And it was such a fertile time, and it was the beginning of, you know, a concrete move to change our world. And that's right. What I see it. I see those squares, and there was also some nice squares going on. But I see squares acting like a combustion engine. You know, may you integrate all your squares is an old astrological blessing. But it's when you got that discomfort of planets that are pulling at you at right angles, that can drive you. And that can drive you to accomplish, to make something happen, to solve a problem. All good aspects tend to bring passivity. And too many tense aspects can make it just kind of people give up. But when you can find that magic place where we have hope and we are feel driven to overcome an obstacle, we're driven to reconcile difficult parts, I think those powerful squares are really beautiful and useful. What I see is that with like a combustion engine, like driving a car, you need a good driver, and the driver has to have a direction that's going somewhere. It has to feel like it's got a, being called towards, not away from, not, the old, you can't say don't think of the pink elephant because you'll always think of the pink elephant. You can't say just don't do this. I was like, oh, no, what would inclusivity really look like? What would it look like to feel that we could have some hope in our government again? And not perfect belief, because we tend to get passive when we think the government's got it, but what's something that we can participate in and have hope for? So I feel good about those squares.
That's great. And then let me just put one of my guidelines on the table for everybody, as an offering. Mm-hmm. Expectation is the partner of disappointment. Okay. But willingness, which is Yorna says to all of us, I am your booking agent. I'm going to connect you to the coolest things possible through the agency of synchronicity. And all I want from you all to seal the deal is just a gesture. Even less right now, raise your hands up and go, I'm available and I'm willing. And Uranus goes, they've hoisted their sails of willingness. Let's go. Let's go with this thing. So, yes. And I just wanted to bring in, mentor Dion Fortune from way back, 1940s, right? And just a wonderful passage in her very trippy book, Moon Magic, novel. Not great literature, but really great. But the character who says, I am Morgan, Le Fay Morgan, I'm a priestess of Isis. That's the goddess of nature, thank you, in the modern world, and this is what it means. And the purpose of ritual magic is to spiral into group mind, expanded tolerance and wisdom. And we go, that's good too. But there's this pivotal moment, I keep it in my pocket also, where the character is, she's put a vase of flowers on the table dedicated to serve as an invitation for Isis to enter the world. And she's put it there. And she steps outside, and she's just besieged by grumpiness. She's, Facebook didn't exist then, but she's on psychic Facebook going, and this is not going right, and the guy's not going right, and that person said that thing, and, all that grievance. She comes back in, and she sees the full moon, we can do this, shining through the window, illuminating the humble vase of flowers, and she feels this incredible downrush, like, and she goes, it didn't matter about my small mind, what I was worried about, this or that. The dedication, serving as an invitation, had clearly been accepted. And in the language of the adepts, I was back on my contacts. Anyway, I love that. I get goosebumps when I talk about it. And that's, I think, what Mars and Jupiter will go to the press in a moment here, and the danger of the press and how we should all become press. Okay, expectation, partner of disappointment, willingness, dance partner of life, small verbal distinction, huge energy difference. And I just remember, when Obama was elected, and then afterwards people were so disappointed. That's the word they used over and over again, which means I am powerless in the underworld. So use that word sparingly. And I wasn't disappointed. He did some, sketchy things and some good things and some sketchy things, but I didn't have expectation disappointment going. I was like, this is a miracle. It's a miracle. And yes, it's not perfect, right? And then we come back to now. And then let me just, I'm going to hand it to you two seconds here. Because Mars and Jupiter say, whatever you're doing, I'm going to give you more, right? So if we could just compost, like if we were all willing, like right now, to toss all past, present, and future expectation and its consequent disappointment into the cauldron and ladle out willingness. We're willing. You know, it's like, wow, we could really get stuff done.
Absolutely. And that's the key. Are we willing to do the work? I always think that, you know, one of the most dangerous lines in mythology is, and they lived happily ever after. Because it really is, and now the work begins. And we have the potential to do the work here. We've got the platform for it, but it doesn't just happen. And, you know, that how do it's like putting seeds in the ground and going, why didn't I get a harvest? You know, you have to nurture your crop. I think the tendency to say, okay, we finally got one person in there. Now they have to solve all our problems rather than, politics is participatory. It is what we make of it. When we stand back, what happens? I think of the, before Nazi Germany, one of the problems that I saw was that there was a very strong occult movement in Germany at that time, and they pulled out of politics. And they said, you know, we're too spiritual to be involved in politics, and then it went downhill from there. That to stay involved and be able to be directing the boat and to realize that you are part of this, you know, the disappointment is they didn't fix it for me. Rather than we have work to do, can we get some work? This is a long road. Let's get on it. At least we have hope on this road.
Right. No, it's true. Just to underline what you said, you know, late 1930s, early there was a lot of yoga teachers and a lot of astrologers and a lot of people who called themselves Shakti. You know, there was a lot of that, right? But completely disengaged, right? It's like, oh, Jesus, yeah. And this is, again, participatory. And we absolutely honor the cauldron of grief and cruel carnage. The story, there are so many every so minute, many. You know, and that's why it's the urgency, like, no, what can we do? The story of the woman who gave birth to two twins, and her husband, the father, went to get their birth certificates, and when he got back, the two twins and their mother and their grandmother were dead. And it's like, oh,
it's agony.
Oh, the cauldron of grief. You know, again, there's stories like that every minute. But in a sane world, that would be a focus, a front page story for a month. Like, oh my God, oh my God. You know, so there is that, absolutely, you know, and that as an incentive to like, whoa, that quality of cruelty, and here comes Saturn, accountability, and to see the binding of cruelty and accountability, to see that team, you know, may cruelty and accountability be bound. We experiment, we do not presume, but we experiment, going, oh, because that by itself, and there are stories like that every minute, you know, it should bring us all to our knees. It's like, oh, anybody who's suffered any small loss, it's like, that's so huge. And it's so much the devolutionary nature of our species. It's like, whew, and there's a million of those. So to honor that and to know about that, and then to offer ourselves in dedication of whatever we can do. You know, and I think that's the internal... You know, there's Joe Cocker with a little help from my friends. You know, Kierkegaard says, purity of heart is to will one thing. And with Saturn square Jupiter, it's like one thing takes many forms. But for everybody going, what is the one thing we all will that might take many forms and many forms in media? And then Kierkegaard also said, presume love in the other. It's an experiment, right? It's an experiment. Even in adversaries, to presume underneath all that. So, yeah. And then you know, we have so much to go on forever, Heather. I love our to and fro. But this time of great danger, I love the two candidates, right? And see, I'm composting, right? People go, if you're voting for Kamala, then you support genocide. I hand it back to Rua. There we go. She does it so much better than I can. Everything. We're not inflating. We're not projecting myth, but we're willing to cooperate. So two candidates born in 1964. It's the Uranus-Pluto conjunction. It is the 60s. You know, they're both dragons, right? I view it as a
sleeper
cell.
That's her and the two candidates on the same party. Right.
Yeah.
Tim.
Yeah. Versus a dog. Two dragons versus a dog and a pig. I'll take it. Right. Just on the Chinese placemat version of things. I mean, I married a dog. It was good for 7 years. You know, not to disparage dogs. Actually, Reed, my former husband, was born a week before Trump, and he's a pretty nice guy. I'm born a week after Putin. It's like, what are they doing with our charts? So 1964, Saturn, Pluto, dragons, you know, and again, we can just play, participate. I love Ursula Le Guin saying, those who do not listen to dragons are doomed to live out the nightmares of politicians. Okay. All right. Okay. Mm-hmm. But it's like, okay, 1964, if you were born then, if you lived through that time period, if you're somebody alive now who was born much later, if you're influenced at all by the 1960s, it's in the atmosphere. It's in the atmosphere. You know, everyone dree their weird. And the word weird is doing such a good job, you know. To dree one's weird means to play one's role in destiny. You know, and Mercury will retrograde back to 21 Leo, which is, go direct on the 28th, I think, but a carrier pigeon fulfills its mission. It's like, for all of us, what is our deepest desire? What is our deepest dedication? You know, and let's be a community of deeply dedicated people, you know, in myriad forms of expression, but colleagues underneath. And let's bring in everybody. Vine Deloria, just a wonderful, wonderful ancestor, human, who at the Library of Congress, the last time I saw him, where he was being honored, you know, and he said, I meet many, many young activists today who are very, very serious about themselves. And he said, we were effective, we were always serious about the issues, but playful and respectful among ourselves. Thank you, Vine. What a good Aries he is. Was. So, yes, and we'll be. And I do want to toss it back to you. But how about team? You know, the deeper thing for all the way up from the underworld to every molecule of what we call reality is like, how about into Pluto's cauldron? You know, the addiction to having an enemy. You know, because, you know, Bibi created Hamas. Israel created Hamas. I mean, Hamas and the
Hamas
worst of the Israeli state.
Bibi.
Yeah, they need each other. Right. And Bibi needs this conflagration to stay out of prison. And Trump needs this conflagration to stay out of prison. It's like, we've outsourced Saturn to these criminal dingbats. So let's insource it. Yeah. And
on the best of Saturn, which is the personal responsibility, you know. We say Saturn is what you don't have as a baby, bones, teeth, and personal authority. And every time you go through a Saturn transit, you grow your Saturn. You grow that, you're right to your personal responsibility. You step into that power. And if you ask somebody else to carry it for you, you're handing them the responsibility for your life, but also the structure, the form, and the authority. So how do we grow that over time here? And you know, you mentioned that Saturn-Neptune square that we're going through. And whenever we see that Saturn-Neptune square, we see the tension in...
Not Saturn-Neptune square. What?
I mean, I'm sorry, Saturn-Jupiter square. Saturn-Jupiter square. That is playing a part of it. But Kamala was born under a Saturn-Jupiter square of Aquarius to Taurus. And she, you know, she's been coming alive as that Uranus went over her Jupiter and Uranus squaring her Saturn. She is coming, she's built to handle some of this tension. She's built to work with it rather than to be run over by it. And I think, you know, you have to be willing to wrestle in here. And this chart, her compassion is strong, all that's good, but she's also willing to wrestle. And she's willing to investigate with her Mercury in Scorpio being squared by Pluto coming up. I feel good about that.
And then let's all in source our authority Saturn, yes. Square, Jupiter, and Mars. We can see Jupiter and Mars conjoined from 1 a.m. to sunrise in the east. Useful to do that. The square, you know, may our communicative press be from a deeply dedicated thing because they're doing a terrible job. And Lawrence O'Donnell did a great job of righteous anger about how the press is terrible. And I think this is so important. Again, something I keep in my pocket is years ago, but a Palestinian man whose olive groves that his father and his grandfather had tended had just been bulldozed by the Israeli army. And he goes, no one will listen to me. No one will hear my story. This is overwhelming, just grief and outrage. I will blow myself up. And it's like, of course, you know. And so it behooves us, you know, to be storytellers, absolutely. And then for everybody to be dedicated that, I mean, everybody says Jupiter's in its fall in Gemini. It's just an assignment, you know, to use many forms of media to suffuse liberating dedication, you know, to give everybody a meaningful voice so they have expanded options, you know, of efficacy, right? Does that...
Yeah, it's liberating words. And you know, Mars in Gemini, one thing that you see wherever Mars is, it lets us know what will really tick us off. And if we don't feel heard, if we don't feel engaged, if we don't feel like we have the possibility of healthy conversation, that's when there's a problem. You know, like you see, you know, the difference between when Kamala did not listen to the protesters and when she did. Very different dynamics in the community, even though she'd already listened to the protesters before the press conference. But the feeling of we need to feel that it is possible to dialogue. Gemini isn't just about speaking, it's about that dialogue. And I think I'm hoping with Jupiter expands whatever it touches, and it's engaging the, I think, potentially heroic enthusiasm of Mars and Gemini. It can also mean...
It's difficult to get things. Oh no, sorry. Finish your sentence. I'm sorry.
I think there is dangers to it, but keep the conversation going, keep it open, and bring that to your heart with your own family. Keep those lines of communication open.
May we all dedicate to being liberating storytellers of increasing tolerance and embrace and of efficacy. Thank you so much, Heather Rowan Robin. RowanRobin.com is her website. And thanks so much to Roxy, apprenticing under the great mentor Kirsten. I'm Caroline Casey, and we will reconvene next week at the end of the convention. Oh, there we go. Okay. Woof, 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 woof.